Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
All right, Javier, we have new tag team champions. How do you feel about the fact that the champs did not get pinned? And how do you feel about the decision to have Swerve and Lee, Keith Lee, become tag champs?
I thought it was interesting because they've been running that storyline in mostly on Rampage between Lee and Strickland having issues, and there was a spot in the match where it looked like Strickland was going to turn on Lee. And so, them winning the title is going to be interesting based on the issues they've been having with their tag team chemistry. With the Young Bucks not being pinned, I think that's to protect them for an eventual Young Bucks FTR, who's really the best in the world, match, so they don't take the loss. And I think they also don't want to unify belts either. So I think that might be one of the reasons why they did that, because the future for the Young Bucks is FTR. I was thinking that it would have been for a unification title, or not unification, but, you know, for all the gold. But things kind of took a swerve there, no pun intended.
So you've done a good job explaining why they did it, the rationale for it. Are you okay with that? Should the tag team title match on national cable have a finish where the champs don't get pinned? And I know there's a history of this, but just because it's done, if there's, insurrection attempts every 4 years, we shouldn't just accept it as, well, it's happened before, let's just be okay with it. Okay, I'm a little out of proportion here in the offense here, but I did kind of groan a little bit at the idea that an AEW tag team title match is sort of secondary to what you explained, which is protecting the Bucks for something more. And for all the good things about tonight's AEW show, I was sort of at the end just going, I get it. And I think you nailed exactly why they did it, but I think it takes something away. And I think the Bucks have been too worried about being perceived as, oh, we're management and we're protecting ourselves, we don't want to be Triple H like or whatever. I think they've been too concerned about that for 3 years. But do you think that comes up, or do you think people go, no, smart, because, well, right now the AEW tag titles are sort of secondary to who the best tag team is, regardless of who has the belts.
Well, I've been recently binging Rampage. I've seen like 15 episodes in the last couple of days. I felt really far behind. And It's like I understand who Strickland and Lee are, because all their stuff has been on Rampage. Next to nothing's been on the entire buildup to this feud between between them and Hobbs and Starks, has been on Rampage. And it even felt like it's almost like the Bucks were the third wheel in this match. Even when Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus, when they had held the titles, a lot of that stuff also happened on Rampage. It really feels like almost as like the AEW tag team titles are not the most important tag team titles. It almost feels like FTR's ROH titles are more important. So it's just really weird how this promotion, who was also set up to be a, tag team company, it doesn't really feel like it's the most important, whoever has the title does not feel like they're the most important tag team on the show. Cause even when Luchasaurus and Jungle Boy had it, they didn't seem like the most important tag team. You had the Young Bucks, you had the Hardys, as soon as they lasted. And, FTR, they all seem more important than Luchasaurus and Jungle Boy. And they were like over on Rampage wrestling the Ass Boys and other tag teams on that, on the lower level, as opposed to the ones that you would see as being the stars. So this title has not felt, the AEW tag team titles have not really felt important. So it kind of feels like I think you either pin the champs or just don't do a title change. That would probably be my preference to keep the title important, but it feels like they're just shifting the titles over here so that the title has something to do while the main tag team story is still going to be the Young Bucks and FTR.
Yeah. By the way, this is even less important because it's AEW, but do we know if Starks was the legal guy?
I have no idea who was the legal guy about halfway into that match. I mean, seriously, there was a point where I was like, I think it was Hobbs tagged someone. I'm like, was he the legal time when he tagged out? Or I'd completely lost track. There was like one point in there where I was like, I give up.
And I shouldn't be critical because I just genuinely don't know. Maybe they did keep good track of it this time, and we just don't know. I shouldn't say we don't know. We just, lost track of it along the way, but maybe they kept track. Maybe it, history indicates that's not a priority for them. But nevertheless, one other thing, and I'm not trying to be negative. This is just genuine questions that I'm bringing up about this main event. How do you feel about ref bumps in AEW? Did you feel there was a little bit of a groan in the crowd when they did it? To me, if AEW is going to do finishes or spots or whatever that have been overdone by WWE, I think there should be a self-awareness of that. I think their audience is aware of it and try to change it up in some way. And one of the ways to do it would actually be to do ref bumps more often, but stay with me, everybody, hang with me, but have them not have anything to do with the finish so that when there is a ref bump, it isn't just a groan because now you know that was done because they don't want to do a decisive finish without shenanigans that the ref doesn't see leading to the finish. So if you're going to do ref bumps, and we can argue about whether they should or not, but if you stipulate that doing it, do them a little more often, not a lot, and have it not always lead to and not always have it factor into the finish. It's the same way I think every once in a while tag teams that are getting along and are not breaking up should have a moment where they bump into each other, shoot each other a look, and then get over it and move on. Because the only time they do that is when they're telling a short or long story about a tag team breaking up, like Swerve and Lee is the latest example. And that's the only time there's miscommunications is when it's leading to a breakup. So to me, just add a little realism and take away some of the predictability by sprinkling it in elsewhere. Javier.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of inoculated to ref bumps because I watch New Japan, and that's like almost every single match. At least they don't do what they do there where, the ref is just out just enough time that he needs to be out. Sometimes he's out for 30 minutes, sometimes he's out for, 2 seconds. Just enough to miss whatever he's supposed to miss. But, yeah, I mean, it is definitely groan-worthy because it pretty much means that from that point on, whenever there's a ref bump or distraction, from that point on for the next couple, sequences, the match doesn't matter anymore because that distraction or that ref bump basically, is telling you that whatever's happening here, wasn't going to happen in the course of the match. Now, sometimes the match continues past that point and it's fine. And I think that in that case is, those kind of moments of cheating and stuff like that is fine. I'm sure we'll talk about this at some point, the opening match had, cheating in the beginning, but that didn't really play into the match at all.
Yes.
You got to the end. So, and that's the thing. So this was the ref bump leading to the whole stuff with the belts and all that, weirdness, slightly overbooked, stuff in a match that was already crazy. The whole thing wasn't there really to protect anybody. So it was just, you're waiting for that. Like I said, that time period to elapse where it feels like the match is back on track. And then that way you can feel good about the ending. And I think this one did, but yeah, I would just stop with that kind of, distraction just to bring out toys. you know, the belts or what have you, because it's just it you know, unless you're doing specifically for a reason to further a storyline, which you should, in AEW shouldn't be doing that often, because that's what what WWE does all the time. You know, once in a while is okay, but in this case, just, you know, give us just a straight up match. I mean, you know,
It wasn't needed. It was to add shenanigans to the match. It, if you unwind, you know, factored into a variety of things happening that led to the finish in, I just give me a ref bump that where nobody gets away with cheating, because the ref kind of gets up quick enough not to happen, or the ref, the heels aren't, you know, aren't like ready to cheat if the ref goes down, and have a ref bump early in a match that they recover from. Just, you know, in other words, just that little extra realism, like Tony Khan. Right before that, I had him on my show here, and he was like, we're not going to have invisible cameras. You're never going to see wrestlers talking without awareness that there's a camera there. And it was like, okay, that's great. Like, that's an attention to detail that I appreciate. They've stuck to that. I don't know if there's been maybe one exception that slipped by, that maybe it was a borderline call, but they've been good about that. So to me, like, it shows Tony thinks that kind of thing is important. And yes, you can make a case some things are more important than others, and it's, you know, subjective, but to me, it gets down to when WWE does things that have been done, so like distraction finishes. You know, I mean, when they're so overdone, even if people running AEW aren't aware of that, their fan base is, and you want to be cognizant that it's going to get a groan. On the bright side, first of all, this is the type of match that pleases a lot of people. I thought it was a blast to watch. I thought that Hobbs was deliberately given some moments here, Javier, in this match to shine. I thought Keith Lee they played to his strengths in the way that this match was laid out and executed. When he got tripped, when he was initially going to do the running flip dive onto the box, I was like, is that a sign they're not confident he can clear the ropes? You know, I was like, is that going to be a thing now? Like, you know, Charlotte almost misses on the moonsault, and then she does a roll through again afterwards, where it's like, just stop teasing the move if you're not going to do it. And we had the beginning signs of that, if they just feel like, oh, he's too big and he can't do it. And then he hit it great, and the crowd popped. So that worked. So there were multiple situations that worked, and even Ricky Starks being a little galled. I'm super, triple super kicking. I'm working with the Bucks. This is great. And then boom, he gets super kicked. Wasn't really a babyface spot for the Bucks. It was just sort of a heel spot for Starks, and also was some punishment that led up to his finish, where he kind of let his guard down, and the announcers called him out on it. So I could go through more, but I thought the various wrestlers had opportunities to shine and be spotlighted. Even at the very beginning, Nick and Swerve had a chance to really shine. And, you know, people have such respect for Nick Jackson's athleticism and just crispness in what he does and how quick he is. And that's, of course, partly what Swerve is known for. And they had that moment early on to shine. So there was a lot of good in this match, a lot of very good in terms of how it was booked and how it was executed. Javier, your thoughts on what you liked about the match, and if you kind of agree with me, this was deliberately booked in a way that let every wrestler in the match kind of have their moment.
Yeah, there was some the powerhouse Hobbs thing. He was the one who looked the best, because you're usually going to remember the last thing the last big moment that you see. And in this case was when that him spine bustering everybody on top of Keith Lee. That was just insane. Honestly, the thing I probably remember, if I remember this match, because, you know, lots of matches in here, but if I remember something, it would be the fact that this match looked like it could have finished like 30 times over. And then it was, you know, a timely breakup. And I'm glad that people were there, because when you have someone late for the break, and then you have to kick out when it was a move that should have killed the person, because it's a tandem move that, you know, it's a tandem move. While it's not like a traditional finisher, you would say, well, I mean, that's got to finish the guy. But, you know, things are broken up. Like, you know, there's no way Keith Lee would have survived. You know, that should have been a pin had someone not broken up. So there was a lot of excitement there towards the end of that match. I also kind of like how Nick who was walking the ropes with Starks, that they're both walking the ropes and, you know, showing off that they're both kind of the same, you know, they're both kind of, when they did the creator wrestler, they were the same, you know, stats basically.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing, you know, to show how, you know, in the ways that they were alike. So there was a lot of stuff in the match itself I liked. It was a blast to watch. as most of these are. It's a train wreck. I don't care that I lost track of who was legal, but
right.
But yeah, I thought it's the AEW special, and that's kind of like what they, you know, what they'd like to do. And whether you know, and it really works for some people. I guess it might not work for some others. JR didn't seem too ornery, so.
Well, he was only out there for an hour instead of two, so that could help too. He stayed fresh. Sean Radican, PW Torch columnist, said on Twitter, that was an amazing three-way take in Dynamite. Hobbs really stole the show at one point with that spinebuster sequence. So many little plot points in the match to pay attention to as well. Swerve in our glory, and Hobbs and Stark stepped up huge in the main event. So Sean, a fan of that match, wanted to read that. One other point on this thing that's from here, at least that's the plan at the moment, Ricky Stark's losing. I was sort of thinking, are they going to have the person who you would expect to lose? Like, Angelo Dawkins lost on Monday, not R-Truth, in a match that included R-Truth. And WWE went with a braver finish. Not sure why. Maybe they just didn't want to be predictable and have the perceived weak link lose. In this match, I hate to say Starks is perceived as a weak link, but, I mean, he is. You know, they protected Swerve more than Starks, probably. But obviously with Lee and Swerve winning, it wasn't even an option to consider. And so do you have Starks, the guy who loses? Does that also take something away from the match compared to Hobbs or, as we discussed, one of the Bucks losing instead? Again, it's not that I can't explain why they did it. It's more just I want to talk through, does that take something away from it that AEW sort of had the guy you might predict going into the match do the job?
In a vacuum, yes, but I've been watching the whole Rampage stuff leading up to this. They've been feuding and they've been going back and forth, and it's pretty much been Strickland paired off with Starks. Starks already have gotten several victories, you know, because he's been challenged for the FTW belt. So, I mean, he's gotten, you know, there have been 10 tainted victories, but, you know, so it is more of a comeuppance, you know, for him. I mean, you could see him as the weakest one, and if this was just like happening in a vacuum, like, okay, we got one guy is gonna have to lose. Who can afford to lose? Well, Hobbs is your big guy, and then like the two that you would probably choose in that match, like you said, was Strickland or Starks. And you know, if Strickland's team's going over, then obviously it's gonna be Starks doing the job. But I think in this case that they're close enough in level, you know, on the whole totem pole, that I don't think it really matters in this case. Plus, you know, like I said, the history, and it's you know, Swerve getting his revenge for the stuff that's been going on in their feud.
Plus, if Hobbs loses, you know, Starks in a way is more established, more accomplished. So if Hobbs loses, it sort of would define him down in a way that might be more worthy of criticism than Starks losing. If you're going to make the decision to, quote, protect the Bucks, then, and you have the issue, as you describe, with Swerve and Starks, and you don't know who's going to win between those two. You don't even know if they're going to be involved in the finish. So when Starks lost, it was not a two-on-two match where you just predict who's going to lose. Swerve also seemed like a candidate to lose. Although, frankly, they convinced me with some near falls multiple times other people were losing. And I think that made the finish not sting very much. It was like a more of a discussion point of not only do you have the Bucks not losing, but you have who might be perceived as the weakest link losing. Does that also further take away from the moment that it should be for Keith Lee and Swerve Strickland? But I just, you know, talking it through, if someone's critical of that, I think you have to take into account the options and what price could be paid, you know, if they went another route too.
Yeah, and anything that Starks can lose, he gains it with his ability on the mic.
Oh, yes, but that can be dangerous because, you know, I mean, I'm sure Ricky Starks would say, okay, I'm going to take my promos down a notch or two then, so maybe I can win now and then, you know? I mean, you don't want to get punished for that, but anyway, let's pause and introduce ourselves. Got a lot more to talk about on tonight's show, the beginning of Fighter Fest that will run through Rampage this week and Dynamite and Rampage next week. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Wednesday, July 13th. 2022, and I'm Wade Keller, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch weekly newsletter, which I launched back in the late 1980s when I was in high school, and I've done it ever since, and I appreciate you joining us here on night's show. It's been fun covering pro wrestling through so many different formats, but the live post shows where we talk through what happens within minutes of the show ending is always it continues to be an adrenaline rush. And it's always fun because of the callers and the emailers and the tremendous rotation of co-hosts. And tonight, the other voice you hear is Javier Machado from PWTorch.com and PWTorch VIP podcast. Javier, welcome back.
Always good to be here, Wade. Always enjoy doing these little things.
Now, did you know that it is National Barbershop Quartet Day, I think? there's some sort of holiday today. It's National Barbershop Music Appreciation Day and National French Fry Day. So Javier, it's great to have you on a holiday.
It's National French Fry Day.
Yeah.
Wait. I'm sorry. I'm gonna have to go because I gotta pick up some French fries. I did not know that. It is my favorite food. I would have bought some had I known.
What national chain has your favorite fries among the national chains?
Okay, outside of Hialeah, McDonald's.
Oh, you sound ready for this.
McDonald's. My favorite fries of all time were Cheeburger, but there's no Cheeburger within my area, so that's disappointing. My favorite fries of all time, some of my favorite big chain fries was McDonald's when they were in Disney because they actually cared about their fries. I really liked the ones from Burger King, not the current ones that are the ones that are currently doing, but I think it's like one or two generations back ago. Those were some of my great favorite
the ones
fries.
With the coating? Like the coating?
Yeah. No. It was before that one. It was the one.
Okay.
Before.
Yeah, I didn't like those.
Soggy because I'm opposite, you know, most people, and I kind of like them, you know, soggy as opposed to like really crispy or crunchy. I do really like though the Five Guys. Five Guys also have really good fries too. That was I'm telling you, it's my favorite food. So I was ready to go with that.
We don't have. I love fries. I limit, you know, my intake because I can overdo it. I'll put it that way. But the current Arby's fries are my current favorite. I will go through Burger King to get an Impossible Whopper, then I'll go over to Arby's right next to fast food. I want to enjoy the whole meal, and if the two are next to each other and the lines aren't long, I'll go get better fries. I'll go to the trouble to do that.
I'm not going to lie. There have been birthdays where I have literally gone to McDonald's, BK, Wendy's before they changed. I hate the new Wendy's fries. Wendy's before they changed, and then Checkers, and I would get like a fry in each one of them. So I've done that on my birthday. So,
I haven't been to Wendy's in a while. Why do they? When did they change their fries?
I was about a year,
like
2 years ago. Not too many years. It might have been like a year, year ago. Because they started running a promotion of like, you know, guaranteed crispy and like hot. Like they're currently running a thing where like if you ask for and you eat one in the drive-thru and it's not crispy and hot, they'll make you new ones.
Okay.
You know, because they're trying to compete with everyone else's. I'm just not a fan of them, and it might be a Hialeah thing because here in Hialeah, I mean, we've already gone on this long, but here in Hialeah, we
I'll edit all this out.
There was one time we go through the drive-thru in McDonald's near my house, and the fries were like brown and like had like chunks of like, you know, dead fries in it, and they're really nasty, and they're cold, and I'm like, hey, can you change this? This is horrible. And then, you know, so they bring me a fresh batch, and they're also brown, and the guy tells me, the guy in the drive-thru goes, oh, it's brown because no one's changed, this is, by the way, midnight, it's brown because no one's changed the oil all day.
Oh, man.
And I'm like, but you're still charging me $3, right?
That's right, yep.
So that's kind of the kind of experience here in the Hialeah area, because in a lot of cases, like, you know, here we do things slightly different. So so I tend to not judge, you know, any food I eat that is a chain or store based on, you know, my immediate area. And, you know, once I go further up north, like the Fort Lauderdale area, then I'll judge them.
I I don't know if it's beef tallow that McDonald's puts in their fries, but it is also beef tallow day. So maybe it's kind of by that using logic, it's also McDonald's French fry day.
Used to be. I don't think they do anymore. That was what they made them the best fries originally. But then they eventually changed it to when they started when at that point fat was bad, they went into unsaturated fats, I think, which then turned out to be bad too. So Batala was what they did originally, and then they stopped, and then like the next generations were still good, but you know, wasn't like anything like the original ones, because they were like literally
they still aren't vegan. They have they have natural beef flavor in them. It's a wheat and milk derivative, but I guess it's not beef tallow, which is a level above whatever concoction they've created now. But they're still fried in beef fat, so you know, you still have that going for you. Crinkle fries or straight cut fries? We're almost done, folks.
straight. I actually like steak fries. The steak ones, because yeah. I like when they have a lot of meat inside, as opposed to, you know, skinny and stuff. So, not a big fan of crinkle fries. I just, you know, it's the texture is just, you know, weird for me.
Yeah. White Castle has really good crinkle fries up here. The White Castle chain. And that's why I'm a fan of the Arby's fries. They're crinkle cut. So I probably lean a little towards crinkle, but yeah, steak fries good. And, shoestring ones are, or real thin ones are frustrating. So I just grab like four at a time before dipping them in ketchup, and that solves that problem.
Yeah.
All right.
So yeah. Well,
go ahead.
I'm just saying this is awesome conversation of the AW show. People are like fast forwarding and like, you know, when the hell they're gonna get
there. They're still talking about it. Hey, what do you? National French Fry Day. What did you expect, people, when you downloaded the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show?
Yeah, and that was all a segue, because I'm always on the holiday shows, and I texted Wade that, you know, oh, are you surprised? Are you sure you want me on today? It's not a holiday.
So I took it a step further and looked at it.
And this went completely off the rails.
Yes. I don't know if it went off the rails. I mean,
well, no, not off the rails, but like, you know, it took a different path and like took the scenic route. So.
But here's the deal. If you weren't going to call, because you don't really have anything to say about Dynamite, you can at least call, or if you already called, push 1, and let us know your favorite French fries. Make your case for your favorite fries, either a national chain or a regional chain or just style. Oh, by the way, I did want to say this. One trick, if you're tired of getting cold fries at the drive-thru, I learned this as a kid, ask for French fries with no salt. You got it, Javier. You stole my thunder.
I'm telling you, man, don't mess with me with fries.
I was going to say, I should have. Yep. And then of course, you frustrate them by asking for salt packets on the side. But they can't be mad, because you just go, well, I'd like to control my salt intake. And then you definitely get hot fries. Although sometimes that means you have to pull ahead. And then, you know, three people go, you know, get their food before you. And then your burger's cold. So you can pay a price for it. But I think it's worth the risk.
Never do that when you're ordering a sundae.
No, exactly. Yes. All right. So we have a lot more to talk about here. We're talking about AW Dynamite. Our phone number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 and keep that. That'll flag you on the switchboard and let us know that you want to be on the show. You also can email us, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. All right, let's get to it. Let's get to calls. And we will begin with area code 845. 845, you're up first. Go ahead, state your name and where you're calling from. Go ahead, 845. All right. We're going to hang up in your 845. That was you. Maybe it's at the drive-thru. That sounded like you might have been distracted. All right, we'll go to a blocked or Skype or international number. Always hard to tell on the switchboard. If you heard a little tone, this is you. Go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from. Or simply, if you called us and pushed 1, say your name now, and then we'll tell you if it's you. Because if you don't, we're going to hang up on you. Go ahead. If you called and pushed 1, state your name. It could be you. I don't know what's happening. All right, call back. All right, up next. We're rolling through these fast, Javier. Evan in Chicago is up next. Evan, thanks for calling. Do you have a favorite French fry?
Favorite French fry. Who doesn't like curly fries? Obviously.
Ooh, yeah. Yeah, curly fries are good. Sometimes they're not. Yeah, sometimes they're not what I'm in the mood for when I want fries, but sometimes they hit the spot. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and yeah, I gotta make them here because sometimes you'll go to Arby's and they'll give you like what's in the bottom and it's just like, you know, just the slight curls and you don't get like a big one, you know, so it's disappointing when that happens.
Although sometimes you get the really big one and then there's no coating on most of it because it never like spread apart in the where they coat it and then deep fry it, and it can be kind of raw on the inside. So it's inconsistent. But the weird thing with Arby's is I don't know if this is true for everybody, and Javier, I suspect you've experienced this. There's always one little curly fry at the bottom of regular fries, and there's always one regular fry at the bottom of my curly fries. And it's like, I almost feel like they're giving you a sample to try to, you know, like show you there's this other kind you should try. But I always get that one, and then sometimes I'm like, oh, I should have gotten curly fries because that one curly fry is good.
Yep.
Yep. I don't know how that happened.
I think it's on purpose.
Yep. Does anyone work at Arby's? If we have lots of listeners. So if you ever – we know people have worked at Arby's who are listening to us. Email, if you're, especially if you're downloading the show on delay, or call us now or email. And let us know if you worked at Arby's. Is that a thing? Like, is that a – you know, when you go to corporate orientation, they're like, this is a very important part of the day. If you've zoned out about how much cheese to squirt onto the beef and cheddar, tune out now. This is even more important. One curly fry in every regular fry at the bottom. All right, Evan, back to you.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, like, I'm glad you thought of Arby's because that was the first place I thought of. Was that it? I do want to talk about tonight, though. Like, that was a good conversation. I do want to talk about tonight.
Thanks, Evan. Appreciate your call. Moving on next to Eric. Go ahead, Evan. If this is the first show Tony Constance is to in a month, he's going to be like, what is going on? We just put on Fighter Fest. And they're talking Fighter Fest French fries. It's like in double F.
No. And I was going to touch that. I was literally saying, you know, we're finally getting some establishment around the programming that AEW is doing tonight, being Fighter Fest, obviously. Looking ahead, you know, just announcing All Out. I really want to know, and I can't wait to see what's in store now for this thing they have, not only with the new tag team champions, but the former tag team champions, the people who beat Luchasaurus and Jungle Boy. I want to see where they're headed towards. Are they looking to jump over the Ring of Honor to see what's going on? Because honestly, when I found out the Briscoes were facing FTR, I thought it was sweet, only because we didn't think the Briscoes would, you know, make a jump to AEW programming that soon, right? So, you know,
They're not, right?
You know, they're not going to be. They can't show up on pretty much the TBS Warner Brothers, the Warner Brothers Discovery stuff, because of stuff they said in the past. So this is just a pay per view, and they might end up being ROH if ROH is going to go on a streaming service or something. But they can't be direct. They won't be. Warner Brothers wants nothing to do with the Briscoes.
Oh wow. Okay. Well, I won't actually think about that.
All right. No, but I mean, it's cool that they're involved in ROH, but yeah, they won't be an actual. They're not actual AEW employees for that reason.
When Gay Marriage was here's what he said, because he's apologized, so I want to be upfront about that. But when Gay Marriage passed, he said when the Delaware Senate passed a bill yesterday that allows same-sex couples to get married, if that makes you happy, then congratulations, 7! That alone would be sort of, you know, snotty, but okay, you know, if that makes you happy, there's a tone there. But then he followed, try and teach my kids that there's nothing wrong with that, and I'll effing shoot you. So that type of comment sticks, you know, if you said it as a growing up and Jay did. But I mean, you know, we're going on 10 years since he said it and he has apologized, you know, pretty profusely, but still, he called it the dumbest, most immature, obnoxious thing ever done. So, you know, that's, you know, you can imagine some executives going, yeah, but you, you know, spent years, for, it was out there for years saying, I'll shoot you if you teach my kids that this is part of the world. So anyway, Evan, back to you.
That's something to research. Honestly, I didn't know what that was happening. I must have fell off with something in the Briscoes because I haven't heard anything like too much from them in a while. So I'm really interested in seeing their direction though, and seeing where they're gonna go with ROH. Luchasaurus, to be honest with you, the next the rest of the year is looking bright for him. I want to see how much he's gonna grow as an individual. You know, taking on a role with Christian and seeing how they're gonna play with that's grown interesting in the short time that it's came to be, and I honestly fell into it some. So I want to know your take on that as well.
Yeah, Javier, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I agree with you, especially today, because on the last show it felt more like he was just doing Christian's bidding. And felt more like he was just like an addendum to the storyline, and that he was just going to be an obstacle for Jungle Boy to get to Christian. But with today, they giving him the squash match and the way they kind of presented him, it almost feels like he's the more of the main event of the story right now than even Christian is. So yeah, I do find it. I like this that he has a spokesperson in the form of Christian. And I am really looking forward to, you know, I always like big guys put in good positions, and he's a good wrestler. So I'm looking forward to what they do with him, even if it's just like something where Jungle Boy ends up deprogramming Luchasaurus and they become friends again by the end of this storyline. It's going to be interesting what the Luchasaurus stuff has they have in store for Luchasaurus.
Yeah, I'm liking it too. Having the closest facsimile to Jungle Boy get crushed by him today, and here's Garrison. What's his name?
Griff Garrison.
Griff, I can think of his first name. Thank you. I was like, is Garrison his first name? No, Griff Garrison. Thank you. Beating Griff Garrison is, you know, just kind of a. It made sense to do that, and I think it adds something to Luchasaurus's character. I mean, he's been sort of a mascot sidekick who did a big move and grunted, and it worked when it was sort of like, I don't know, the kid-friendly faction with, you know, little Marco Stunt. But now it's like you're looking at him as something with more an act with more potential within AEW, you know, kind of Kane-like, and that there's an edge to him. There's a sinister aspect to him that just wasn't there before. And yeah, I mean, and I hope it's not soon, but like you said, you know, maybe he can be deprogrammed. Maybe it happens soon. Then he can go babyface again. And I think he'll be a bigger star for having gone through this detour. Evan, back to you.
Yeah, no, it is beautiful. It is beautiful. Not as beautiful as the little dialogue that we got to see from Eddie Kingston and Chris Jericho, that's been something that's been brewing. And even with the Jericho Appreciation Society being, you know, in Jericho's corner, we never really know what Eddie Kingston has up his sleeve. And that's always why it's been so interesting to see him fight. And, you know, next week, Fighter Fest Night 2, it's or night three or week two, it's going to be special. It's going to be a great night.
All right, very good. Evan, appreciate it.
Thank you. All right, take care, guys.
Yep, you're welcome. Our number is 347-215-8558. If you call and want to be on the show, be sure to push 1 on your keypad, and don't push 1 if you don't want to be on the show. Chris Fielder from New Mexico, Truth or Consequences, New Mexico, the home of Cactus Jack, said, I'm broke and now I'm hungry. Could you or Javier DoorDash me some fries, please?
Unfortunately, I'm broke too. If not, I would really take you up on that.
I'm just too busy running the switchboard, so trying to keep the show going here. All right, JB from Detroit email. We'll stick with email here for a second. If you had to pick right now, who is JR's biggest wrestling crush in AEW? Is it Wardlow or is it Jake Hager? I'm glad it's multiple choice. I didn't want to think of the whole roster. I don't think I've ever heard him call a match of either of theirs without absolutely gushing over them throughout. I'm convinced Jim Ross was disappointed he couldn't call this entire show because he only got the Hager match and missed out on Wardlow versus Orange Cassidy. Also, I was impressed with Anna Jay. We all know how good Serena Deeb can be, but I thought that Anna did a great job in not only keeping up with Deeb's chain submission wrestling, but looking good doing so. I was a bit surprised that AEW went with the typical WWE trope of having Anna lose in her hometown. Also, what is the worst tag team name? Your Glory or Thunderstorm? So, Javier, a few things there. You want to latch on to any of them, answer any of them?
JR's
biggest crush?
Well, JR's, I mean, that it's got, I think it's Jake Hager. Overall, it's Jake Hager, although, you know, he's, I feel Jake Hager should be jealous, should have been jealous of all the love that he was giving Wardlow. But, you know, I'm amazed at how much he tries to punch Jake Hager. Because, I mean, Wardlow could be something big. You know, so that's fine. But yeah, the Jake Hager thing, I like where he's at. I like his position. I like what he's doing. I thought he served his purpose really well today. But yeah, he puts him over like he's like the next best thing since sliced bread. So, Anna Jay, I was fairly, you know, cause I remember, you know, early on she's come along. So it was not, I mean, I'm not gonna say it was a 5-star match or anything, but, she's definitely come along. I mean, she is in there with a good hand with Serena Deeb, but yeah.
I think Wardlow's his biggest crush. I just think he's so consistent in talking about him, but it is, he'll quote Bill Watts, I don't know what his quote is, but he mentions Bill Watts pretty rarely, but I don't think he's mentioned the big man quote in a while, but something about, you know, big man or a territory gets hot when a big man's on top or something like that. I don't know. Do you remember, Javier?
No, I don't actually remember that, but because the thing with Jake here, I think is the school connection. Might be
For sure, yeah.
You know, because he gushes over that with the school connection. But yeah, I mean, I remember he always says that something along the lines of like when there's a man, it's been a long time since I've heard his podcast, but yeah, that when there's some, you know, someone big like that is what was he said? He reliable and looks good and all that stuff. He basically ticks like all his boxes. So.
I think if Hager wrestled singles matches as often as Wardlow has recently, maybe things would tip in Hager's favor with the school connection. But I think Hager's been defined down. You know, we kind of know what he's going to be. And Wardlow, let's look this up. Jake, if I can type, Jake Hager age. Okay, so he is older. Because Hager's 40, Wardlow's 34. And I was just wondering for a second, like, are they – really close in age, because, you know, Hager seems like he's been around forever, and certainly Wardlow hasn't. But 6 years apart, that's pretty significant. But, yeah, Hager, you know, you kind of know what he's going to be.
Well, and don't forget that he has three wins in MMA. Don't forget that.
Right, yep.
He's 3-0.
Yes, yes. I don't think WWE had Anna Jay lose, like, hey, let's put her in her hometown and lose.
Yeah, AEW. Yeah.
Wanted to give her a showcase match.
Yeah, put her in there, make her look good with her family. She had a really, she has had a really good like final spot where it looked like she was about to win, but it was just the experience. So it wasn't like a pratfall kind of victory, which is that's the problem with WWE is that when they lose, it's a pratfall kind of victory. Thing about Anna Jay is Anna Jay is on a much different level on the roster than Serena Deeb is. And, you know, you would have expect going into this match, not knowing she's at home time, you'd expect her to, you know, just run through Anna Jay. I mean, this might be just because, again, I've been watching Rampage, and, you know, Deeb had been doing the 8-minute thing. So I'm like, well, Anna Jay shouldn't, you know, this is going very long for what I've been, you know, from the way they were treating Deeb. So, so it's like a weird feel to, like, you know, Deeb was like murdering everybody, and then all of a sudden she's going this long with this person. But then, you know, it's her hometown. So if you keep that in town, you know, Anna Jay fought the best match she could. She almost beat her, but then she lost. And I think this is also going to be transitioning to the next storyline that she's going to be involved in, because this actually felt like a step forward for Anna Jay, because when Ty Conti spoke with her, they used to be friends, and she said, and she told, oh, you are not doing things the right way, leaving it open to whether either Anna Jay is going to either turn heel, following what Conti said, or she's going to, fight against it, leading to a feud with her and Conti.
All right. Zach in Texas said, I've been watching for most of my 32 years, so I'm rarely shocked when something happens. As I type this, I'm genuinely stunned and thrilled. I didn't see a title change happening in this match. After Swerve and Lee hit the Spirit Bomb stomp and it got broken up, I thought for sure the Bucks were retaining. I'm happy to be wrong. That ending sequence was an all-timer. Everyone got over it. Seeing Keith Lee dive over the top rope like damn flying bus will never not pop me. What did Ross say? He was a washer and dryer on roller skates? That was pretty good.
That was good.
having Keith Lee, a fellow Wichita Falls native, as champion is a point of personal pride for me, too. Surprises can be a good thing. Man, I'm such a happy wrestling fan right now. Javier, we talked quite a bit about the match, but did you he brings up a couple different points here. Did you expect a title change going in on this because it was a three-way and, oh, that gives a chance for the champs to lose belts without getting pinned? Or did you think this doesn't feel marquee enough because it's not a 2-on-2 traditional match, so this is more just to be a spot fest? Like, what was your expectation going in? Were you as surprised as that?
Yeah, I was surprised because with FTR in the horizon, I thought this was going to be a champions retain situation, because normally in a three-way, it's just – we want the champion to retain and we don't really want to give a finish to the match. So we'll put an extra person in there to make things murky. And the champion usually retains in that case, unless the purpose of the three-way match is to change the titles without the champion getting pinned, because they're going to be doing something else and you're protecting the champion. I did not think that. I thought this was case number one where it was just, they just wanted to get these two teams out of the way because I guess in the rankings they're high and put on a good match and then, move on to FDR. But I was really surprised that they changed the titles. I am kind of excited because of the strife between Lee and Strickland. So it's going to be interesting to see how their defenses go from this point on. I'm sure that that team is going to eventually disintegrate and they're going to have to feud with each other. But it's going to be, it looks like that they're going to be together for at least, for a while now, now that they won the titles.
Yeah. What have you thought of Keith Lee and Swerve's team, their team name, and Lee in general? Like, is this is this going to be kind of the peak for him, or is this sort of a launching point for eventually him to have some pretty significant singles matches?
Man, Lee is really weird. He's one of those people that could probably go as high as he can, as he wants. But it's just a lot of things are weird. I think some of it is you've reported some of the stuff, people say, so I think that some of that stuff might hold him back. In terms of them as a team, they have some really unique, interesting tandem moves. Like in this match, when Lee was on the apron in the corner, and Strickland climbed to the top, and then and pretty much jumped at Lee and bounced off his body like a wall jump, using Lee as the wall. They've done a couple of things like that where it's Strickland doing like parkour off of Lee, which has been really interesting. Sky's the limit, for Lee, if things get, if things break the right way. But I think he's older, right? So I don't know how much time he has for things to completely break the right way.
I think a lot of this match was laid out, Javier, to play to his strengths, but not overtax him cardio-wise and agility-wise. And I just, that was sort of a knock on him, is that as he's gotten older, I'm not sure if he's a fan of French fries, but maybe he is. And it's some of that flash in agility was dropping off, and wrestlers were finding him harder to work with because there wasn't much selling. And there was a sense he might try some things that he couldn't pull off. And then an attitude to go with it in WWE. And so I think this is my answer to my own question. I think this is the right way to use him. I think he's a dynamic personality. He can hit some that, you know, as Zach says, you know, he pops for it every time. But do you want to throw him out there to potentially fail or look bad compared to what people's memories are of him going back to NXT and before, if you put him in singles matches? And so you can kind of test him out, put him in a tag team. I like the contrast in styles with Swerve and Lee. It seems like they're hinting at, you know, Lee and Swerve having issues. So it does seem like they're probably eventually headed that way towards a breakup. And I don't know who the heel would be. You know, people might say Swerve, but, you know, Lee might make a good heel, and it might, I don't know, you can make a case either way as far as ring stuff goes. Because his dazzling moves are what he has, but there's sort of an aura that he gives off that can be heelish if he's against somebody popular. But I guess I'd assume – well, let me ask you, Javier. Who do you think should be a heel if they do break them up, and who do you think has been more heelish so far in how they've been reacting to each other?
Well, it looks like it's been Strickland who's been the more heelish one, because, I mean, he's got more of the attitude, you know, kind of thing going for him. And you know, and he was the one who took advantage and eliminated Lee during the thing. But because of that, it's a possibility it could be Lee, where he ends up, you know, while, you know, it when that happened, because that was like what started everything, was when Strickland, they worked together. And Lee saved Strickland during the whatever Rumble match that they had. And then when it came to be the other way around, Strickland eliminated Lee. So that's kind of what started the rift between the two of them. And they're also very different personalities. Like, it was a promo that where Lee was talking about how much he respected Taz, because, you know, they're feuding with Hobbs and Starks, and how much he respected Taz, and he watched his videos and studied Taz. You know, when it was, you know, and then while he was saying that, Strickland sitting next to him, I didn't. No, I don't care about him. So it's definitely a very different thing, which is why I think that it would be more interesting if it's Lee who ends up being the bad guy. While it looks like Strickland's doing everything that's leading to the breakup of the two of them, that it ends up being like Lee overreacting that triggers it. But yeah, I think it looks like they're hinting at Strickland if they break up is going to be the heel, but they could swerve and have it be Lee at the end.
Yeah. So anyway, I think, did I jump in while you were talking, or did I jump in and then throw it back to you and then comment? Because do you have any more thoughts that you want to add on Lee in particular?
No. I mean, I missed everything. Just watching Dynamite, I missed. I don't know how I would feel, would have felt today, you know, because it, you know, the stuff between these teams just ended up like popping up on Dynamite like fairly recently. I don't remember them doing too much.
Yeah.
On, you know.
By the
so,
way, we talking about that. Do they do enough on Dynamite recapping Rampage? Or someone who was watching Dynamite but behind on Rampage, and now you're someone who's watching Dynamite who quickly caught up on Rampage, it's perfect to ask you this right now. How do they do as far as linking those shows together? Because you've been on both ends of it, not watching Rampage, and now you're really caught up on Rampage.
Well, it gives you enough. They give you enough on Dynamite to basically let you know what's going on and give you an idea why they're having this match, but without the emotional investment, because all the build has been on Rampage. So while they can tell you, like in this example, is like, oh, these two teams have been feuding for a while and it's personal and stuff like that, you're like, okay, I get it. And then you buy into the match, but the real investment, the real, you know, character development has been over on Rampage. I equate wrestling a lot to comic books, because they're both storytelling that is constantly going on. So, you know, you're up to Action Comics or like 1000, it's always being written, it's always going, and wrestling's the same way. It's something that's always going on. And one thing that they do in the comic books is that they'll have like a big event, like say Civil War, you know, Marvel Civil War. But there are a lot of ancillary books, you know, that are involved. Now, you could just read Civil War and enjoy it, but there's going to be, you know, some character developments that deal with specific characters you like that would be in, like, Iron Man. You know, what's going on in Iron Man? What's going on in Spider-Man? What's going on in this other comic book? So you can enjoy it by itself. So Dynamite, you can enjoy it by itself. But if you want more completion, then you kind of do have to go watch the other stuff. And it's not just that, because today with the apparently this week, at some point this week, Brody King attacked Darby Allin at, like, a signing in a clothing store or something, I think it was.
I saw that online, and people were wondering, are they going to even acknowledge it on Dynamite?
And they did, which is good. And they showed you clips of it, which is what the important part is, because in a lot of cases it's just Excalibur telling you, you know, breathlessly telling you, hey, this is what happened. The fact that they're showing you that, the fact that they showed you Thunder Rosa losing to Yamashita. I said it wrong.
Yeah.
it's okay. You know, they showed that. What was the other one they showed? The Atlantic title being defended by Pac against
Pac.
They're always talking about the world outside of AEW, but the fact that they're showing it to you, it gives you more of a connection to those characters without you actually having to go look it up. Now, if you want to see the match that Shota Umino and Pac had, you could, which is, you know, and you could get a fuller experience. But, you know, the fact that you saw the snippet and you saw, like, the highlights of it, it's good. And I really like that. It feels the last couple episodes of Dynamite, like you said, they put in more of the sweat into the actual show and produce it more, just a bunch, instead of just being a bunch of matches, make it feel like they're building something.
What do you think about the inclusion of non-canon, because once it's on Dynamite, it's sort of canon, but things happening outside of AEW. And, like, to me, the All-Atlantic title is cool. They did that, but can you explain, is that what the All-Atlantic title is all about? Like, that it's going to be defended in a way that's different than the TNT title? And if so, why not, like, explicitly explain that?
Yeah, because I did not read what Tony Khan said, but he recently, you know, mentioned that the point of the title is to be defended in outside promotions, outside and with matches that he would sign off on. It would be nice for the Dynamite audience to know this.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
And they explicitly say it, and they actually haven't. It would have been nice if they had said that before the tournament. So, you know,
exactly.
You know, because, I mean, the tournament happened, and then it was it's been 2 weeks and no mention of the title. You know, it would be nice to know that this is a roaming title, and it's like, you know, you're sending one of your warriors out and telling people, hey, try to beat me. Hey, try to beat me. And then have that as an excuse. Like, I say Pac loses it to someone in another territory. Then that person, it becomes the new, like, hot potato, and then, like, show up. A way to give more of, you know, because, you know, a lot of the complaint with the Forbidden Door build-up is no one knew who these New Japan people are. But if you're already talking about it and you're building, you know, like, next time you see Shota Umino, you know, you might remember the matches with Pac has. The match he had with Pac in his attempt at getting the Atlantic title. But, you know, so if he shows up on AEW, they'll talk about that. It's already in canon. You already set that breadcrumb, and it helps more it alleviates that issue of, like, well, who the hell is this guy? I mean, you're still going to have to do, you know, if you're really that interested in it, you're going to want to have to, you know, you're going to have to look it up. Like I said, you know, if you're really interested in what Spider-Man's doing in the Civil War, pick up the Spider-Man book. But if you're not, and, you know, and you could actually still enjoy the Civil War book. That's kind of like my, you know, my thing of that.
Yeah. Just step me over for a second. Anything else as far as Rampage goes, since you did take, you know, binge watch, I was going to say Crash Course, but binge watch it. Anything else that you would recommend about Rampage compared to Dynamite and the dynamic in the relationship between the two shows?
It feels like they have a little bit more time to put in, like, promos. I mean, not to the level of like what we would probably like what we saw today in Rampage, but you know, they do the little things where they'll do little promos and a little bit more setup, a little more like that polish, because since I guess it's because it's taped, I think they have more time to add, you know, little promos here and there and build up. And there've been some good promos that were for what was happening on the following week's Dynamite that we never got to see. Or we only saw like a snippet of, or it was mentioned in passing, and then we didn't actually, you know. So like that promo that they showed in Rampage should be a promo that they should have aired as they're making their entrances, kind of thing. So you could get like more invested in the match that's happening. So the thing is that, you know, we see the promos on Dynamite that. That to promote what's happening on Rampage. Those are good because Rampage is the smaller show and you're trying to get the people who watch Dynamite to watch Rampage also. Like, when you had the Hangman Page Cole Texas Deathmatch for the title, you know, you wanted your promoting to try to get people over to Rampage. However, when they're doing the promos in Rampage to set up for Dynamite, why are you doing that? The people watching Rampage are going to be watching Dynamite.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I would like to know how many people watch Rampage and not Dynamite. I'm pretty sure that number is minuscule. So it's like, why do some good, and I'm saying some of them are pretty good, really good promos. Why not then show those over on Dynamite?
Yeah. All right. Very good. Let me look at our switchboard if I can find it. Oh, there we are. Okay. Let's go back to phone calls. By the way, Chris, Deke, James, Charles, Scott, Grant, I see all of you have called up. None of you have pushed one on your keypad. You've all called the show before, so feel free to chime in with your favorite French fry. Your favorite French fry. But in the meantime, 516 is calling, and that is Scott from Long Island. Scott, I just mentioned you. Thank you for pushing one. You were on hold, and then you unpushed and pushed when I said you hadn't pushed one. So sorry about that confusion, but good to hear from you. Welcome to the show.
No, I was driving. I like just got home, so I was listening, and then this is a good time to give my opinion on, you know, classic New York Greek diner fries, crinkle cut, always good. I'm opposite of you know, I like the crispy, like textured, so. Curly fries sometimes, but usually crispy, crinkle cut. That's always good for me. But yeah, same as everyone else. Now I just want fries, and that's an inconvenience because I don't really want to go out right now. So we'll wait till another day, I guess. So the first thing I'll mention is Takeshita is absolutely awesome. Never heard of him before. This little one that started a little while ago. I'm in the extreme minority, I think. I've never been a fan of Moxley or his offense, WWE or otherwise. He's got that kind of, I like this version better than, you know, Dean Ambrose, whatever, but I was just never, you know, I was always a Seth Rollins guy. That was kind of like that style, and you know, it's all good, but man, the match he had with I guess was it Rampage, maybe, I like that better against Kingston. But then Moxley also, like, this and they said 26 years old, 25 years old, like, man, like, if you're going to have him for a few years, you might want to kid push, and looks like they are. And, you know, you want all these outside promotions to get involved. You got a stud from another one, like, go with it.
What, Javier, what'd you think of that match? What'd you think of how they're using, I was practicing.
Takeshita.
Takeshita, yes. Because you don't want to pronounce it phonetically. It's not good. Takeshita, yes. Your thoughts on that?
I think is he part of the DDT deal? Because I know he's in New Japan.
I'm not sure, but I think so.
Yeah. So I did not know who he was until he showed up in AEW, and he's been impressive the times I've seen him. I have not gotten, because supposedly they even talked about it on this match. I haven't gotten to his match with Eddie Kingston, which also got rave reviews, which is supposedly why Moxley actually recommended Takeshita for this, which makes me think that there's a possibility that he might be entering the Bullet Club. He didn't have the same ending as the Yuta one did, because the Yuta, like, that was a great match. but it was very similar. And you, and here's the thing, you could tell that Moxley likes Takeshita because he let Takeshita bleed to try to help him get him over. And that's Moxley bleeds a lot in his matches. I think he ended up bleeding in this one too. I think it might have been accidental in this case. Because it was like at the end of the match for no reason. Takeshita.
Well, it was
part of.
I guess it wasn't for no reason in the sense. Well, maybe I missed when it happened.
I missed when Moxley got busted open, and it was like really at the end of the match. So,
yeah, no, I think you're right. Yeah.
So that's why I think it might have been an incidental issue. And it's happened in the same place like the last three times. So I'm wondering if he has like a deep gash that just keeps opening up in matches, because that's almost what it seems like. Because the last two times it's happened, it's been like in the middle of the match, it was like there wasn't a spot to set it up. So I think he legitimately has an injury, and he's just, or he might have just like built it into himself, like surgically, so he could just bleed on command.
Oh my god.
I
don't know. I haven't heard of that surgery, but if it's available, there will be wrestlers who are very much signing up and traveling to whatever doctor's willing to do it.
Yeah. So, it was definitely you could tell that Moxley was trying to get him over, Takeshita over, and I wouldn't complain if he joins Bullet Club. But yeah, he's had some good matches. I hope it's not Flavor of the Month for Tony Khan. And that they continue using him, and building up something with him, particularly if he's like, part of their roster. Because again, I'm not entirely sure what the situation with DDT is. If he's just a loner, or if he's just like an excursion. Because that's something that happens with young Japanese talent. They go somewhere else to learn new moves and to build their character. But yeah, I'm high on him. So, and hopefully, like I said, hopefully he's now Flavor of the Month. Hopefully they could do something, interesting with him. And, I think putting him with Bullet Club would be fun. No, Bullet Club. Oh, sorry. Blackpool Combat Club.
Oh, I was wondering. Yeah. Okay. I'm glad you clarified, and I had forgotten to bring that up. The match itself was just a blast. Like my take on it is that's just two wrestlers wanted to wrestle each other. And they just wanted to go out and have a really good, 13, 14-minute match. And it just was, really fun. I mean, AEW doesn't always give you a clear – you're not always sure who you're supposed to be cheering for. It's like Wardlow and Orange, the crowd was split in the match before that. And it can sometime work against crowd heat. And I'm not as much of a fan of – this match is great and we're going to chant how great it is. I'm more of a fan of get invested in a home team and away team, a heel and a face, who you want to see win, who you want to see lose. But when it's two matches back to back that worked, I think as well as Wardlow Orange Cassidy did, I think that's going to be a divisive match and different people have different opinions on that. And then Moxley and Takeshita, it was, back to back examples of AEW. I think I would argue successfully pulling off two face matchups. Scott, back to you.
Yeah. Speaking of faces, does anyone know what the world's biggest face, Long Island's own MJF, is up to? Because the show is not as good without his awesome segment every single week. And I notice it because he's my favorite in the business, because on Long Island, he's literally the biggest baby face I've ever seen live. The first time he came to UBS was insanity. So any idea? Because it's just weird that I thought maybe after Forbidden Door, like, they'll start going into — I know they take things slowly, but with him, it's like, for all I know, like, maybe part of it was real and then got fake, or part of it was fake and then got real. Like, it's really, I don't know, convoluted. Any idea?
I forgot who you're talking about. Jeff? You said his name is Jeff?
Yeah. Something about him being better than you,
lot.
You know it.
We've had a lot of news story, a lot of news cycles since MJF was dominating the news. Just like Cody dominated the news for a while, and then in Cody's case got injured and he's out. MJF's case, whatever that was, played out weird. And I asked around for a while, and now people aren't really talking about it. But you know, I asked Tony Khan outright, and it's one of those subjects he didn't reply on. You know, I mean, so either it's contentious and perhaps lawyers are involved and something that started as work, then turned into a shoot, then turned into work, and then went too far back into a shoot. And, you know, they were on edge. You know, there was kind of an edge to it. And there were more hard feelings than both sides anticipated, or somebody went too far. I'm not ruling that out. I also think it's possible it was a shoot that turned into a work, and they just decided to stay quiet on it. So when he comes back, it's going to be big news. But, I mean, I know people who talk to him in the lead-up, and – you know, I've talked to other people who talk to other people who talk to him. You know, like, I mean, just to be, like, transparent in terms of, like, the layering in, of who I talk to. And, like, there's people who talk to him who are like, I don't know how many of my conversations with him in recent months were genuine. Or was I part of him building a foundation of people going, well, when I talked to him, it sure seems like it was real, and he was willing to, you know, step away from AEW if he was really disgruntled with Tony. So, you know, there's people wondering, were they part of the work? Was he working people for weeks or months in the lead up? And I just don't think there's a clear answer. And I think that's in part why a lot of people aren't talking about it, because wrestlers don't like to be made out to be marks, but wrestlers like to be part of a work. And so it's one of those two things. Either Tony Khan is being real quiet about it because it's a touchy legal situation, or it's a work and he just doesn't want to lie until MJF returns. So they've just agreed not to talk about it. Scott, that is not, you know, a definitive answer, but at the same time, if it is a work, I think they're handling it well by not talking about it. And if it's a shoot, we might've seen the last of MJF. And I could imagine Tony saying, you're going to sit out the duration of your contract. You're not going to go make money for WWE after the stunt you pulled. And if it is a work, that's what they want us thinking is the case. And if it's a shoot, then you're going to be calling in 3 months going, what about MJF again? And no one's going to be talking because MJF played a hand that backfired and Tony Khan doesn't want to talk about the guy anymore because he feels he gave him a big chance and he feels betrayed. So, you know, it's one of those scenarios or a variation of it. And I've talked to people who are, you know, pretty firm on what they think, but I haven't talked to anybody who's 100% sure.
Yeah, you know what? It's funny because – oh, sorry. No, you go.
Go ahead, Scott. Remember your thought, Javier, but go ahead, Scott. Yeah. Respond to that. Go.
No, I was just going to say quick. You know, it's funny because you always hear people saying, like, oh, I felt weird even asking the question because in the back of my mind, I'm like, you know what? If it is work me. Like, I don't understand. Like, isn't that the whole point of this thing? So continue. No, that was all.
Yeah, I think one of the reasons we also haven't heard about it is because I would think he would make his return against CM Punk. As a champion, because, I mean, that's kind of what the storyline would kind of make sense, you know, go revisit that for the championship. But with CM Punk's injury, I think that might just be, you know, who is he going to come back to now if it is a work? So I think you're going to have to go through CM Punk returning, then, solving the issue of the interim, you know, the reunifying the belts. And then you'll probably see him come up. So if, you know, and my guess would have been that he probably would have already been back had it not been for CM Punk's injury. So assuming it's a work, I think there's still a possibility. There's one thing online that kind of made me feel I was at 50%, then moved to 55% that it's a work. And that's MJF during an interview, not MJF, Wardlow during an interview. Basically said that MJF really is, you know, as bad as he is on TV. He really is a blah, something, and that the time he spent working with him on TV was like was a horrible experience, and that's all I'm going to say about that. And the fact that he said that made me think that okay, this is work.
So, or it made you think it was a shoot.
And I can't talk. I think he said that I can't say anymore. So it's like, okay, that's made me think that, you know, or, you know, again, it could have been a shoot, become a work. But at this point, we're in work territory. That is my guess. But I'm like the caller that I'm perfectly fine being worked if this is a work. So I could just imagine this all out.
If it's, if it's a work, it's smart of Tony Khan to not be part of working people, because I think that would be a blow to his credibility, and people would think, ah, he's just a carny promoter who just was a mark for being part of a work. And so by saying no comment consistently, you know, at the Q&As and any media questions, I think that is Tony protecting himself and protecting the work.
Or protecting a serious situation, which is where we're at, where there is something really serious with, you know, like you said, with lots of money involved and lots of lawyers involved, or it's something that it's a work that he's, you know, keeping to himself. It's like two extremes. We're dealing with two polar opposites here.
Yes. Scott, anything else you want to bring up?
Yeah, that's why it's so interesting. One final point. I just felt like, you know, watching before, like, Forbidden Door, when they were throwing, like, 100% of whatever that was at you every week, where, you know, a show would end in 10:05 Eastern, I'd have to be like, what happened? Because 90 things happened, and they were all confusing. I feel like they've kind of, I don't know, maybe last 2-3 weeks, kind of slowed it down a little bit. There's not that part, like, I don't know, 20 minutes left or 15 minutes left where Excalibur goes through 90 things. And now it's like 7 things and they have graphics for each of them. And it's like, all right, like you're still throwing a million things at me, but like, I can kind of think like what happened in the last 2 hours. Oh, that happened. That happened. That promo. I'll forget a few, 'cause it's still like, no, it's the opposite of WWE where I think like what happened. And I'm like, oh, that was, I didn't like that. Whatever. That was stupid. Whatever. Dumb. Not into it. This was like, oh, that was interesting. That was good. That was a fun show. And then, like, I'll forget the rest. You know what I mean? It's just, it's good to see them slow down a little bit, in my opinion. But, yeah, that's all I had.
Great. Evan, or Scott, excuse me, what do you like your French fries dipped in?
I'm a ketchup guy. It's simple. It's easy.
Yeah.
It's always there. So, yeah, that's it. So, I'm on my way to McDonald's at 11:30. Thanks a lot, fellas.
You're welcome.
Sorry about that.
Have a good night, guys.
Yeah, and
it'll be worth it.
By the way, if you feel yes, and if you feel at all guilty about eating French fries, please pay attention to our sponsor, Factor Meals, because nothing will cleanse your guilt from eating French fries more than a delicious meal from Factor's meal delivery service. I was on the road today. I was on vacation for a few days. I got to see Emo Phillips in person. Are you familiar with him, Javier?
No.
Okay, look him up online. We'll go Emo Phillips' debut on Letterman. There's a great compilation video. Fantastic stand-up comedian. I saw him when I was like 12, 13 years old on Letterman. Did not understand what I was looking at. And you'll know what I mean when I say that. But he is so funny, and he went on – he's on a tour of U.S. and Canada with Weird Al, and I had to see him. But it was up in Duluth, Minnesota. So I went up there with my family for a few days, and just got back right before Dynamite, and I had about 10 minutes to eat, and I had Factor Meals in the fridge, and it was absolutely delicious. They were some of the free meals I got. I'm a subscriber to the food delivery service, but I took the week off because I was going to be away. But they actually did deliver some comp ones because they're a sponsor of the show. And I just had a like really good curry dish. And it took 3 minutes to heat up, and I was eating it. And I am energized and very satisfied. There's so many meal options. So go support our sponsor. And if you feel guilty eating too many fries or don't feel great afterwards, you know, because it isn't a health food. Factor, I wouldn't say it's like a health food, but it is healthy food, if that makes sense, because it's whole food ingredients, and I'm real picky about that. Despite my love of French fries, I really try to load up on whole foods and minimally processed foods. So go.factor75.com/Wade120. That's go.factor75.com/Wade120 and use code Wade120 to get $120 off your first meals. That's go.factor75.com/Wade120, coupon code Wade120. Go visit their website because you can customize your meals for different types of diets. I choose, you know, the vegan options, but they have just great, a whole wide array, and they're not meal prep services where you got to mix stuff and follow instructions. You just heat them up, but they're never fresh, never frozen, and I really endorse it. I have become addicted to having those around for times when I just want to have a good meal on short notice. So back to French fry talk, maybe. We'll see what Grant from Detroit has to say. Grant, thanks for pushing one. Thanks for calling in. First things first, are you a French fry fan? And if so, what kind? And what do you dip them in?
Definitely a French fry fan. Curly fries is my preference, but I know y'all going to probably think this is weird. I dip my French fries in sour cream.
Oh, that's not weird. That's not weird. I sometimes do on ranch, barbecue sauce. There's like there's kind of a what chain has, and I don't eat at the chain, but I have, it's like a almost a Thousand Island or Orange Sauce or something like that that can be really good. So yeah, I'm a fan of a variety of dips, but I mean, you know, ketchup is usually what's available, and that's usually what I do.
Yeah. All right, so I just got two things for y'all, and I'm gonna let y'all go and answer. So the first thing is, I didn't hear the beginning of the show, so I'm not sure if y'all covered it or not. But so I was thinking that we were going to end up having a winner take all with FTR and the Bucks at All Out, but it doesn't look like that is the case now. So my first question is, what do y'all think is going to be the direction they go for the tag division, especially with Swerve and Keith Lee as a champs? And my second thing is, I don't know if it's me or have y'all noticed that a renewed, like, push for the House of Black, because it seems like they set up, like, three different rivalries for them in, like, the last 2 weeks. And I'll wait for y'all answer. I appreciate it.
Great. Thanks, Grant. We did talk about the taking situation. Javier, if you want to add anything more based on what Grant said, you can. And then you can also move on to House of Black, which you mentioned earlier. They had a vignette this week again. I've been kind of waiting for them to get House of Black kind of, I don't know, just revved up and feeling more immersively relevant and not just sort of a side attraction, I guess.
Would you say you were hoping they would get the house in order?
No, I wouldn't say that. I would actually avoid saying that. your thoughts?
Yeah, it's kind of weird because that's the other thing on Rampage. I've been watching almost the entire build for a lot of the build for Penta, and you know, Death Triangle was with them. Yeah, it felt like, okay, so you have Brody King and Darby, right? And who else are they dealing with?
Last
week they set up Miro and Aleister Black. They also set up a match for them on Rampage with Dark Order.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah.
That was the one I was trying to remember, the Dark Order with Hangman Page scenario, which is just kind of weird. And I mean, unless what they're planning is a 3-on-3, so you have Hangman Page, Miro, and Darby on one side, and then you know House of Black on the other. That might be what they are long term planning for All Out the next one, right? That way you get, you know, your bigger name people in one match. That might be a possibility. That's the only reason I could think why, because Brody King looks like he's specifically going after targeting Darby Allin, and it looks like it's Malakai who's specifically targeting Miro with that promo. And the Dark Order Hangman Page was probably just for whatever, but I could see Hangman Page then maybe start feuding with Buddy Murphy, depending on whatever his situation is. Have you heard, Wed?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, so assuming he'll be back. I'm assuming he'll be back by All Out, and then it'll be Hangman Page.
The presentation-wise, is going as heavy on the vignettes as they do. Do you think that's necessary and prudent or limiting and can almost get to the point where you zone it out where – you know, obviously the comparison would be Bray Wyatt, and it can sometimes just seem like there's a little too much, too many platitudes that don't add up to a lot, or you have to sort of like, you know, deconstruct what he's saying, and you're just sort of left with a feeling but not thoughts, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I've always been a fan of the spooky stuff. I've always been a fan of the cultish stuff. Oh, and not in real life, in storyline. I've always been a fan of that stuff. But the House of Blacks just hasn't been working for me. Aleister Black, since he came back, hasn't been working for me. I thought at first it might have been the whole him getting involved in the Codyverse might have been the thing, and then it was the feud with Death Triangle, and that was fraught with injuries, and the storyline was all over the place, so I gave it that chance. But those promos really, you know, those really do feel like, because most of the Bray Wyatt promos, he is like talking about something if you're like immersed in the spooky stuff. But the stuff that Black is saying is more like, I'm going to use big words that you might not really know what the definition of them are, and you're going to have to look them up, and maybe some metaphors here and there. The one promo that the House of Black has cut that I liked was the Miro one. That one felt like he was like communicating in Miro's language, which is what perked my interest. But then we followed up with nothing. So again, pacing. I mean, the pacing is like, I mean, first off, that mentioning of Miro came out of nowhere. I'm like, oh wow, you know, this felt like it came out of nowhere, and it looks like it's leading for nowhere also at the same time now. So, but yeah, I think ultimately we're going to end up seeing some sort of like situation with all three of those men.
Yep. Grant, back to you. Is there anything we didn't cover you brought up, or anything else you want to add?
I think that was it. Like I said, I did kind of, I was kind of curious. I don't know if, like, if y'all covered exactly what the Bucks were going to do, or all out, or what FTR was going to do, or what Swerve
Lee
was going to do.
Yeah,
we mostly talked about it in the beginning, but yeah, I was the same boat as you were, that I did think that it was going to be a match for all the gold when you know for the because one of them don't the FTR also still have the triple A titles?
Yeah, that's,
so
yeah, that's,
you know,
triple IWGP and Ring of Honor.
Yeah, so then with the Young Bucks, it would have made sense if that title. I mean, it's still September, so that's 2 months away. So maybe they end up getting it back between then and there. If, you know, maybe that's the whole point, that the Bucks say, "Hey, we didn't get pinned, so we deserve, you know, a match in a month or two," and then they win it back, you know, and giving the titles to Swerve and Lee just to lead to them eventually breaking up over the titles or something like that. I don't know. I mean, that is just some speculation of what they might be doing. I hope they don't do that route. I'm not advocating for it, but I think that's another possibility if they are going to have a match for all the gold, or it might be a possibility that they want the Bucks to win. And, well, no, but that would be stupid thing. I was thinking about the IWGP. They don't want the IWGP titles on the Bucks, so that wouldn't make any sense if it's why they would lose the AEW match. So ignore that.
And Javier, you seemed to trip over saying AAA earlier, AAA. Just, I don't know if you want to practice that.
Yeah, well, because I decided to say it in Spanish, AAA, so...
I know you were,
and I'm like, Wade, you're going to call me out for this.
All right. Grant, anything else for us?
No, that was it. I appreciate it. I'm going to try to call in a little bit more often. I got a little bit more time at night now.
Nice. Cool. Yeah, and check out the beginning of the show, because we did talk quite a bit about that was our, like, opening, you know, segment before we got to talking about French fries.
Indeed.
Good. Hope to hear from you again soon. Thanks. All right, let's go to Bryant in Boston next. Bryant, thanks for calling. Are you a fan of French fries? Do you have a favorite chain?
I do like French fries. I don't really care what chain they come from. I mean, Wendy's and McDonald's are good, and I usually eat them one of three ways. One either with ketchup, one bare, or the third one with marinara sauce. So,
marinara, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, the marinara sauce pretty much goes well with everything, especially like fried shrimp. But the first thing I want to bring up, and I don't know if you guys have talked about this, I'm sure you have at some point, but why in God's name in the first match between Wardlow and Orange Cassidy, why did they have the best friends out there doing some stupid shit, trying to take a turnbuckle off and then bringing a chainsaw out from under the ring? What was the point of that? That was just, it served no purpose during the match. It was bizarre. And quite frankly, you shouldn't be having a chainsaw on TV. I'm sorry. That's, I don't know if you guys can make sense of that at all.
Yeah, I guess it's to keep the reputation of the best friends just being involved in stupid shit going. It's been a while. It was dumb. They're always trying to be cute about everything they do, and I think it's mostly obnoxious and too clubhouse insidery. And so, yeah, not a fan.
Personally, if those two released, I don't think I would miss them.
Yeah. Javier, what do you think? Besides that, my joke was funny, or wasn't a joke? My comment, yes.
Yeah, well, it was just, you know, the S bomb and just the way that the delivery was what was great on that. I like silly humor. I'm a BT. Well, I haven't been watching BT, but that kind of comedy, just I like that. The entire purpose and the reason why I like the fact that this isn't beginning the match, so that people that don't like it could just, you know, once it's done, it's done. The idea of the turnbuckle thing and the chainsaw is that these two, because they said in the promo that, oh, we're going to cheat. There's no way that Orange Cassidy can beat Wardlow, so we're going to cheat. And the idea is that they are so bad at cheating because that's not what they do. So they couldn't get the turnbuckle undone, and they, you know, they brought a chainsaw to cheat with, and it was the whole idea of the chainsaw is like, it's overkill. What the hell are you doing? And then they immediately got kicked out so that, you know, you could get on with the rest of the match, which, you know, I know it's going to be divisive for a lot of people. But it furthered the characters. If you like the characters, it furthered the characters. If you hate the characters, you're just going to hate them even more.
All right. Yeah, go ahead, Brian. Yep.
Yeah, I respectfully disagree with that point of view. There's no reason chainsaw should be on it. Yeah, but
that's the point. That's the joke. The joke is that it's so stupid, and then that's kind of the joke. But, you know, so for some people, it's like, oh, that's so stupid, it's funny. And for some people, that's so stupid, I don't want to watch it. So, you know.
Well, I personally don't think that has any place on TV. And I think anybody who finds that funny and should be on TV, I don't really have a whole lot of respect for that opinion at all. But anyway, I'll move on. Takeshita, really, do you guys know his contract status or something? Is he signed to DDT or something? Because I really think that Khan should sign him if he isn't signed to a contract already, because he's really impressed me. He's over with the crowd. I do think they should. I think the reason why they don't have him win matches on TV is because he isn't signed to a contract. But personally, I think Khan should sign him. I don't know if you guys know what his contract status is.
Yeah, I mean, he's with DDT. I don't think he's available full time right now. So I would like AEW. I am an advocate because I think the feedback, my impression of him and the feedback on him is so positive. I think they have something here, and I would make it a priority to sign him and make him your kind of full-time Japanese star. He's a 10-year veteran. I mean, he's been around, but he's still, you know, he's in his late 20s. They're pushing guys as new, you know, like Wardlow, who's in his mid-30s. It's not like it's too late to just define him in front of their U.S. audience. And I don't think there's any shame in losing to Moxley.
No, definitely not.
Think he was competitive and looked like he was in his league and belonged in his league. So, you know, that he didn't look like he was out of place in the match against him. So I don't know what the politics are, and sometimes it's a personal thing. I mean, he wants to come in for a bit, but he doesn't want to be in full time. And I just don't know. I just don't know that. I don't know if you know anything more, Javier, or if you have another opinion.
No, because I'm looking over to see if I can find anything of what his contract status is, but I'm assuming with the DDT connection, it's probably something to do with Omega, since Omega, I think, still has connections over there. But, yeah, I mean, it could be that he's testing the waters over here. Might be going, you know, when his contract is up, it might end up going. He might end up going to AEW. So, you know, I do think that they could build something. I mean, I'm with the Yuta stuff. I don't. Again, it's like, I don't know if it's the flavor of the month for Tony Khan. You know, that's my concern that we're going to be seeing a bunch of him and then he's going to vanish. But we'll see.
Very good. Brian, anything else you want to add?
Yeah, I'll bring up one more point because I know you guys are probably pushing for time. So, the women, I didn't really get an answer to this when I asked it last week, so I'll ask again and hopefully you guys have an opinion on it. But the Tony Storm, Thunder Rosa, Britt Baker, Jamie Hayter thing. This is the second straight feud Rosa and Storm have had with a tag team, and this one will actually be a lot more meaningful than the first one did. I'm just wondering, what is the point of this to either build up a match between Storm and Rosa at All Out, or is it to bring in women's tag belts? I'm just curious as to what your guys' opinion on that is. So thanks for taking my call and have a good day.
Yeah, Javier, I appreciate it, Brian. Thanks for calling in and giving us your thoughts on French fries and dips too. All of that is good. yeah, we didn't talk about the women, the women's match tonight, and yeah, Thunderstorm. We brought up if the nickname is bad, but we didn't talk about them TV. So yeah, Javier, take that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I really hope it's not for tag titles. I mean,
yeah.
It just enough with the titles for now. It might be set up again 2 months, so maybe set up a breakup between Tony Storm and Thunder Rosa leading into that towards the pay-per-view. Because remember there was also some issues in the Britt Baker hater camp too. So maybe full explosion in a four-way women's match for the title on the pay-per-view. That might be somewhere they're going. I really don't, because the thing is, I don't see them building too many other tag teams in the women's side. So you know, so that's why I don't think that's going to be a title situation. But I think it's just something to give them something to do while, you know, somebody gets built up somewhere, whether that's Tony Storm or Britt Baker to, you know, build her back up to be another challenge, you know, to challenge Thunder Rosa again, or somebody else that I'm not thinking. I mean, the only thing is it does feel like Jade is the real, you know, champion right now. Because she's the one who's mostly involved in the singles matches, and Thunder Rosa has been, and she's complained about it. That's like, hey, you know, you're not really, you know, pushing, you know, you're not really giving matches to you know, build the legacy of the title. And I do have to say, in case we don't mention, because I just remembered, it took me a minute, but I the sandbag that Britt Baker brought.
Yep.
That, you know, once I got it, I didn't get it until after the show.
You
was
didn't
over.
Get it at first? What's
no, I didn't, because I was just like, I was into the whole Thunderstorm thing, and I'm like, okay, yeah, whatever, it's good. But then I'm scrolling through Twitter, and then it's a picture of them with the sandbag. I'm like, well, wow, they set this joke up a long time. Oh, wait a minute, sandbag. Oh, and then that's when I got it. So I mean, I thought that was
now bad. I do wonder if it's an inside joke and someone sandbaked somebody in a match, like the wrestling jargon, and that was part of it. It wasn't just preparing for a storm.
Well, I mean, I know you're joking and being facetious, but yeah, that for people who don't know, that's because Thunder Rosa was accused of sandbagging Shafir. So it worked as part of the joke of, you know, sandbags because of storms, but then
it is good to bring it up because we don't want to assume knowledge on stuff like that too. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, and so there was a little bit of meta commentary, and when you are going to break into meta commentary, this is the way that you do it, where it's like, you know, you are making a joke about something or saying something, but like it could have a double meaning for the people who are in the know. That's when it works for me.
I'm still wondering if the Natalia Liv Morgan thing was like a work, like trying to get a buzz on the internet. Like they're trying to, you know, they get jealous when other people are there's a controversy about sandbagging or, you know, whatever. And we're going to get in on this. So let's act like there's some heat there before we have a match a week and a half later or 2 weeks later, whatever, on SmackDown. All right. So on to, we'll do another email here. Shay from Brooklyn, I think. Well, no, I'm not sure because he didn't sign it. So anyway, there's a full name at the top, and I think it's shortened to Shay, and that's why I thought it was Shay from Brooklyn, but I might be wrong. So we'll say, we'll just go with it. Anyway, the TNT title felt more important to sign your emails. The TNT title felt more important tonight than it has since the Cody-Sammy ladder match. I love the open challenge aspect of the TNT TBS title because it often gives us matches we don't expect. Wardlow and Orange was such a strong comedy and character-driven match. Have you noticed a shift in the way Orange Cassidy is presented? I really enjoy the new mind games focus they've given him since his return. It's always been there, but I think there's been an added emphasis to it lately that makes all his matches feel a little more serious, even with his gimmick stuff. So he wrote other things, but your thoughts on that, Javier? That match, it sounded like you were disagreeing with me earlier on when I complimented it.
No, I agree with you. And I was.
Oh, good. Okay.
My reference was that I knew it would really, that match was driving some people crazy. Some people were throwing.
Gotcha.
Crazy.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it. I thought it was really well done. I mean, I'm fine with the silly stuff when it's just plain silly stuff. As long as it's not like your main event or stuff, like in an opening match or, you know, but, you know, in its place. So, you know, cause I mean, I love the, Wrestle House. I love all that stuff, but, with this match, it was about as silly as you can get with outside of the best friends stuff. Yeah. You know, once the chainsaw and they got kicked out of ringside, you know, and they also called back to the fact that now they have wrestling manager licenses because they got kicked out, previously because they Lambert, I think, kicked them out of being at ringside because they didn't have any they didn't have the actual manager's license, so they got kicked out, and now they do,
right.
And then they screw it up. So you know, so again, it worked for me. But the match itself. You started with the whole shenanigans things and him trying to get into Wardlow's head in the way that he always does it with his things and even involving Danhausen, but Wardlow was one step ahead of him every single time. He knew Danhausen was there. He pulled him out. He didn't look like an idiot because of anything Danhausen did. He cleared all that stuff out. You ended up having the match. He starts manhandling Orange Cassidy. And then Orange Cassidy just basically uses, his speed and the fact that he is smaller to slide away and to try to get the advantage. He gets the advantage for a little while, and then you get he goes for a move, he gets caught, boom, he's gone, one hit. So I thought it was it did not make Wardlow look like an idiot. It was stuff that Orange Cassidy did that's within his character, and it was, you know, and like the emailer said, that they were really emphasizing that these are mind games that he plays to frustrate his opponents, and then when they get frustrated, they make mistakes. They really played that up. There was the, you know, to the point where he gets in trouble, and then, I think it's when he caught the orange punch. And then he gets in trouble, and then he starts doing the slow motion kicks to try to get away from it. When he gets, finally gets angry and goes to attack him. So it worked into their characters. It worked in terms of like protect. You know, Wardlow's not an idiot. And then this is like the best use of his comedy shtick. Is it main event? I don't think Orange Cassidy is ever meant to be a main event, but it's a fun. It's a one segment that's fun.
And I think when you get the crowd reaction that Orange Cassidy gets, if it's not for you, I get it, and you absolutely have a right to that opinion, and you can express it. But it should be dampened a little bit when the crowd is into it. Like your criticism of it should be put through the filter of, yeah, it's not for me, but it seems to be working. Now, that doesn't mean that you still think it's worth it, because you can say, hey, it's narrative busting. You know, it doesn't make sense, some of the things he's doing. But I think they're cognizant of it. And as you mentioned, there it's more about mind games than indie-rific comedy. And at the beginning of the match, they mentioned that Orange is – the announcers talked about how Orange Cassidy is the wrestler with the best record in AEW, the most wins or something like that, without having ever held a title. And this is his chance to change that.
Yeah, I mean, it's like a three-ring, you know, the three-ring circus. Like, I've never been a fan of the high-flying acts because, I don't like the Daredevil – watching the Daredevil thing outside of wrestling. I don't like the Daredevil thing because I'm expecting people not – you know, I don't want people to die. But I love the clowns, and I love, you know, other, you know, stuff on the show, you know. So, but, yeah. But the high-wire act is just not for me. You know, that's kind of thing. And some people are going to hate the clowns. Some people are afraid of clowns, you know, so – It gives you enough, and as long as it's not like, you know, like if the people were selling the slow motion kicks, unironically, because I mean I could see a heel doing that just to, you know, try to fight back mind games, but like if unironically they're actually selling, you know, the stuff that he does, then we'll have an issue.
Yes. Yep. Okay. So there's more to that email. Mox. And Takeshita, did I do that right?
Takeshita.
Okay.
Yeah, sure.
It didn't sound right. Takeshita. Was a hard-hitting match. Mox matches are so good these days, and Takeshita has delivered every time he has been given a chance. I love that AEW doesn't shy away from face-versus-face matches. We got two really good and very different ones tonight. There's something enjoyable about the mutual respect that takes place during or after matches. And I thought it was good, you know, that Wardlow gave him a was it a fist bump or whatever? Just a
yeah,
sign
yeah,
of
it was
respect.
Fist bump. Yeah, it was fist bump.
Bump. Yeah,
because
yeah.
He did like the not making a fist bump thing that he does.
Yeah. Main event was a fun roller coaster, although I was cheering for Team Taz. I'm still excited that Swerve and Lee picked up the victory. Really have no idea where the tag title is headed, and I like that. I recommend everyone watch the few minutes post-show clip that AEW put up. Keith Lee's post-match speech was really emotional. I got to check that out. Then Claudio and Hager even delivered beyond my expectations. They have great chemistry, just a solid big man match between them. And Jericho and Eddie's last sell toward their final chapter was also pretty good. Overall, really fun show. So Shay brings up a couple good things here that we haven't talked about. Hager and Claudio, it did, I think, max out my range of expectations. I didn't think it exceeded it. I had maybe higher expectations than some because I think I tend to be a bigger Hager fan than average, but who knows how to gauge that. It's anecdotal. But I also know there's a ceiling on what he does, and Claudio's the most likely opponent to help him hit that ceiling because he can go out there and have that heavy-hitting match that he likes to have with a body that can take it but also create most of the movement and the athleticism. But I thought that was one of the better Hager matches, you know, we've seen in AEW easily because there haven't been that many that were even memorable. So, Javi, your thoughts on that? And then also, we haven't talked about the Jericho promo and the Eddie follow-up, which I thought Jericho's promo was one of the highlights of the show.
Yeah, on the Claudio and Hager thing, the good thing for me is that I missed all of Hager in WWE because I took a break from wrestling, and in the middle of that break, I turned it on to see, hey, what's going on? And Hager was the champion, and I'm like, this guy's the champion? Okay, moving on. So I miss all of Hager, so I actually don't have much of baggage. I don't have Hager baggage. So so he's really worked for me in AEW in the role that he has, which is Jericho's heavy, and I don't really remember him having what too many singles matches that matter like this one did, and I thought it worked. It worked for what it was. You got Claudio over, and Tony Khan better be planning on doing something with Claudio because he is over as hell. I wouldn't be surprised if he's one of the most, you know, over people there. So I really, you know, so I thought it was good. I really enjoyed that. And yeah, I thought the Jericho promo was very, very good. A couple things. One of the things I liked is that, because to me this, I don't know if it feels the same way for you, but this feud seems like it's been going on for a while. But in his promo, he pretty much promises this is the end of the promo. This is the end of the end of the feud. He pretty much promises the end of the feud, so it makes you look forward to the match. He brought up the fact that the Painmaker's undefeated, so so that's a hint that, you know, that there's a chance that he, you know, wins. Sorry, that he loses. This might be the first time the Painmaker loses. In AEW, by the way, Painmaker's undefeated in AEW. And, yeah, I mean, the barbed wire everywhere match. Oh, they promised blood, obviously. So, yeah, that should be a spectacle. Hopefully they don't get kicked off the air or anything.
Yep. All right. We are running along.
Kingston also. I forgot about Kingston. Yeah.
Kingston.
I mean, Kingston is just Kingston. And, you know, I kind of like his feud with production, which I think is like the biggest feud right now.
Yes.
So.
Oh, he gets 14 minutes, and I get what? Yeah.
He gets 5 minute promo, and I'm just he's like talking to the, and like it was weird because at first I'm like, man, could you just stop the meta stuff? And I'm like, well, it's not really meta because he's talking about, you know, the production, and like it makes it seem like he doesn't care about the fact that this is a show, that they're filming the show, that he just wants to fight, he just wants to do his stuff. And that the fact that there are cameras on him is in the way. And I think that, like, my only issue with that is that kayfabe is so dead that it's like, you know, dude, we know it's not real, kind of. It creeps in a little bit. But, I mean, he does his damnedest, and I really enjoy it, and I really appreciate for him doing that.
Yeah. All right. We're definitely running along here, so I'll – pick out one more email I marked here. This is quick. Kyle from Tinley Park, Illinois said, what's your opinion on some managers not coming down to the ring with their clients? I noticed with Taz and Regal, I feel like it disconnects them a bit from their clients doing it all the time. I do like it, but I prefer them going to the ring with their clients just a little more for their matches. Your thoughts? Thanks for your coverage of our great sport. I appreciate your professional opinion highly. Have a great night. Thank you, Kyle. Yeah, the Team Taz thing, like, it struck me when the previous email said, you know, I was voting for Team Taz, and it's like, wait, what? Oh, yeah, that's right. You know, like, I knew it, but it wasn't, like, at the forefront of my mind, even if Taz was cheering him on during the match, because, you know, Taz is a coach and a leader, but not a traditional ringside manager. And I get what Kyle's saying, but I kind of, and I'm old, you know, like old school managers, I just like have a, I'm an advocate for old school managers and having some good ones and some bad ones. You know, sometimes you just don't know what you're going to get. I like that Stokely Hathaway is there, and I like Smart Mark Sterling in his new role. So like it works, but I think there's some value in like Taz being a guy who's like, yeah, I got a team, but it doesn't mean I'm going to walk to ringside and be at ringside for them. That's not part of my role, being a coach and a leader for them. But, you know, Kyle's saying I feel like it less it connects them less because of that. So, Javier, where do you come down on that? Do you think there, even if you can make a case for it, that it does have a downside?
Well, the thing is that they have so many managers that I kind of like that they treat their clients differently. So you have the ones, you know, Dan Lambert, who gets involved in the matches and stuff like that. Because, I mean, if you had every single manager doing that, then on the Hobbs and Starks thing and Team Taz, I do agree. I feel like their stock is on the rise. So my issue was in watching with Rampage. I'm not a huge fan with the fact that he's coaching a team, but the fact that he is coaching a team, it's weird because I'm like kind of halfway because I don't – there were a couple times where they jumped out of commentary to attack the other opponents, both Taz. Well, Taz didn't attack, but he you know, led the attack with Starks, who was also on commentary on Rampage. And I don't like the person on commentary running out, and particularly doing a regular, you know, regular gig, coming out and attacking the opponent, because it's like part of, like, you know, why would he be allowed to commentate ever again? You know, if, you know, because he's just using that to be there so that, you know, he could have an unfair advantage in jumping an opponent. So,
right. Yeah.
You know, so I was not, I mean, because that actually happened in New Japan when Kevin Kelly was calling it with ELP, with El Fantasmo, and El Fantasmo at the, you know, for the main event jumped out and interfered in the match. And then they said that, oh, he's no longer allowed, because if you're sitting in commentary and interfere in a match, that's it. You lose your commentary privileges, which I think would make sense in any single sporting event when you're allowed to be at ringside but you interfere in a match. So I that's the one thing I don't like about that whole Taz relationship. Although for the most part they were clean with it, where he did not get him, you know, he just cheers for them, and again, that's conflict of interest stuff, you know. But in terms of like when you bring in someone like Regal, though, Regal's just sitting there and, you know, just talking to him and talking about his team, that's fine. I wouldn't want him to really get involved in stuff, or like, you know, Jake the Snake is not someone I want to see really necessarily, you know, involved in stuff. So yeah, I think it's fine having different kinds of managers and different kind of relationships. And, you know, what does Regal really need? Regal not being there kind of like puts over the fact that Brian and Mox don't need Regal there. You know, he's mm-hmm. you know, because they're men. They don't need a person there chaperoning them.
Yeah, yep. All right, very good. Is there anything else you want to bring up from the show before we sign off here?
This is for me and for maybe like a handful of people. The fact that they got Peter Cullen to do the narration for the All Out promo that they ran, I was like marking out for that. Peter Cullen's the voice of Optimus Prime in the original cartoons and the Bayformer movies. And you know, Optimus Prime was like, you know, he was my other dad growing up. So, I heard the voice. I'm like, and I'm like, is that him? And I'm like you know, I got goosebumps just hearing, you know. So, yeah, I mean, I'm 99% sure that was Peter Cullen. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But hearing it, I was like, oh man, that's awesome.
I just want them to get the guy who imitated James Earl Jones for TNA.
He passed away, dude.
Who did?
The guy who imitated James Earl Jones, he passed away. They actually had a couple years ago.
I missed that. Okay.
Yeah, they did. I mean, there's another person who doesn't sign as near, because I think they stopped paying. I forgot his name.
That is me, Javier.
Yeah, but yeah, because I think they at some point they didn't want to pay him, so they got someone else who also kind of sounded like him, but not
oh my
close.
God.
And then that guy who did those promos, yeah, he passed away. They did a you know, a tribute to him on a show. I want to say a year ago, but I'm at the point where when I say a year ago, it's really been like 5 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, because like yeah, I think that's pretty much it. Let me just look over my notes real quick. House of Black promo we covered, and just a real quick question, because I want to get your take on it. What's your take on Hangman at this point?
Yeah, good point. Who is it's almost like I could say Hangman who? I mean, he has been just downplayed and demoted to almost irrelevance as a former champion who didn't get a title shot, and now they're talking about battle royals, and he's dressing up goofy, and he's still with Dark Order, right? I don't know. Like, I mean, I need to ask around a little bit to find out if like there's sort of a feeling that he just, his heart's not in it, or he let them down. I mean, I know he's like, you know, legit kind of insecure. And if that just like started to irritate people, like that he just, you know, even I was there, you know, for his post title victory presser. And it was like, he was like, whoa, this is a big deal. But he seemed almost overwhelmed by the moment. And hadn't really given thought to being like a locker room leader when I asked him about that. And, you know, they play that up on TV. But in part of it comes from he just doesn't, you know, he's not like a formally trained wrestler who does have a bit of a rep for potatoing people. And is that coming into play too, like with some stuff going on? So, like I said, I'm sort of brainstorming different things that might be going on. Maybe it's they have to wait until some people are off the injured reserve list before they want to rev up something with them, and they don't want to do something in the meantime. So it could be something as simple as that. But I still like Hangman. I like him in the ring. I like him on the mic. And I feel like since, you know, last August, it's been almost going on a year since he was peaking, and it's been rough since then. How about you?
Yeah, well, I mean, one of the interesting things was when I got to the Hangman Cole match, I had watched that. That one I did watch when it happened because of the fact that the title was on the line. But since I'm catching up now, I'm like, you know, watch it again. But catching that one without the build to it, I ended up enjoying the match more. So, like, the build actually had detracted from the match for me.
Yeah.
So like, and I'm like, yeah. So my guess would be like something along the lines that, you know, maybe it is the, you know, because the Millennium Cowboy is less of an, you know, is less of an act than, you know, and closer to real. Maybe it's a lack of confidence. Maybe he, you know, because we've criticized his run. You know, a lot of, you know, there was criticism on his run, despite him having awesome matches. Maybe that got to him too. And maybe he doesn't want the limelight now. Maybe, you know, the fact that he's taking a back seat right now is maybe a choice. Although, you know, he seems to, you know, when he talks about him not getting a rematch, he has that twinge on his voice that sounds that, you know, there's more truth to his feelings than, you know, he's not. Not a promo. He's kind of saying something true. So yeah, it's weird. That's why I want to get your take. Is like I have no idea. It's just weird.
Yeah. No. I. It's like I said. It's something worth asking around about to kind of get a sense of if I can narrow down what's going on.
Yeah.
All right. Very good. Well, thanks to our callers and our emailers. Everyone, enjoy your French fries. If you listen to the show start to finish for the last couple hours, you probably, in the time that the show's been going on, either ordered fries, walked to get some, or went to a drive-thru window to pick some up. If you did do that and we are the reason, please email and let me know. WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. If you took a picture of your fries, you are welcome to post them on social media at the Wade Keller or at PWTorch. Either way, I'll see it. Javier, and enjoy your late night order of fries. If you do that, everyone should have an air fryer and frozen fries in their freezer for occasions like this too, because you can make really good fries with the air fryer on short notice in the middle of the night.
If I didn't have to work tomorrow, I would definitely do that.
All right. Thanks for staying up late with me, Javier. Well, plug something. We didn't get, I never threw to you for plugs.
It's definitely getting late. Like my tongue's not working as fast as my brain is. With the new New Japan G1 tournament is starting up on Saturday, I think. Or with the timeline, I'm not time discrepancy. I'm not sure if it's on Saturday or not. But the G1 tournament is starting, so I'll be covering that in the New Japan Pride podcast. So I'll be coming back to cover that. I'm not sure. I'm probably not gonna be able to do one for every show like I did last year. Time just is not permitting. But I'll cover some of the shows. So be on the lookout for that. That's under the Go VIP if you're not, and be on the lookout for that. Good time to start New Japan on the tournament, so you can see like all the wrestlers and the different styles that they have. And also do the primers. Probably not gonna be a primer for the ROH. Is the ROH this weekend?
No, I think it's next weekend, but now you're scaring me. Let me look it up. I think we got a weekend off, the 23rd.
Okay. Yep. So it's not this weekend. Thank God. All right. So, there are definitely not gonna be a primer this week. Well, don't know if I'll do one for ROH because I'll be knee deep in G1 at that point, and I have no idea what's going with ROH. So that's pretty much it. So
cool. All right, awesome. Thanks everybody. And by the way, we'll have a flight show tomorrow. Jason, people have been wondering where Jason Powell is. He mentioned it on Twitter. He's been sick, so he's going to be on last week and then hopefully this week. But I was on a mini vacation early this week. And I got to see Emo Phillips and meet Emo Phillips after his set and talk to him about his set. I basically did like an interview with him about his craft, which was awesome. Such a cool experience. But I wasn't able to record a flagship on Tuesday this week. So Jason will probably be joining us on the flagship next week. Jason Powell from ProWrestling.net. So tomorrow the plan is for a simulcast of The Fix with Todd Martin. So check out our Blue Logo show tomorrow for that. And thanks, everybody, and we'll talk to you all next time.